Roundtable Podcasts, underwritten by Proctors, the Capital Region's premier performing arts center featuring the best in entertainment from Broadway and around the globe. Proctors.org.
Well, Chris Gibson, we only have one more conversation between us before the next round, so I wanted to talk to you a little bit about several things. Perhaps you could take a few seconds on each or a couple of minutes on each. Rural broadband, why is it that we still haven't got it?
Well, of course, this is done at the federal and state level, and then there's a public-private partnership. Look, in my view, at the federal level, we have two programs. We have a farm bill, which I call the ground game. We get about 2 or 3 yards in a cloud of dust, and through the farm bill, we have made a difference in our 165 towns. It tends to be rather small, but it comes in at even at the township level. In some cases, a little broader than town, but these are grant programs that help with telecommunications, telemedicine, for example, where we help like Margaretville Hospital. And it made a big difference during Hurricanes Irene and Lee. We saved lives because we put this grant in there into that hospital that allowed them to consult and save lives of people who had trees fall on them. So, you know, that's important. But then we have a bigger program. By the way, that smaller program also helps schools. In some other communities. But the bigger program is called the Connect America Fund. There's bigger money. There's $4.5 billion in that account. In my view, the problem was the rules that were written for that. The first round, it was only for the big companies. These are your major corporations. And candidly, most of it, sadly, went unspent. Because, you know, here you have a situation where we're talking about rural broadband, where the profitability we already know is doesn't fit the model for the corporations. And then we had a pot of money, which was taxpayer money, to help. And the big corporation said, well, you know, it's just not attractive to us. So some of us, both sides of the aisle, have been advocating to change the rules, to say, allow our family-owned telecoms company, of which I have like five of them in our 11 counties, and rural co-ops. We have the Otsego Electrical Co-op and the Delaware Electrical Co-op. Let them compete for these programs because their kids live with, you know, in our community, and their kids go to school with our kids, and they're not going to worry about having some excess, you know, some big profit. They're going to do this even if they have a marginal profit because they know that it's important for the community. Now, here's the good news. It appears that, you know, Chairman Wheeler and the administration are listening, and it looks like
the FCC.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, well, in the second and third rounds of this, our smaller companies should be able to compete. Now, that we dovetail our federal effort with the state effort. I want to give big props to David Salway. He is the leader of the governor's program. I'm certain that David Salway is who Max Weber had in mind. It's hard to imagine now, but when he came up with the word bureaucrat, it was actually a term of endearment. It was actually considered a compliment. Now, we don't view it that way in these days, but because, well, a long story. But at any rate, Weber,
I always love it when you drop in a great yeah. political scientist.
Well, you know, Weber yes. would have, I mean, David Salway is a very virtuous public servant who works very hard for the people of this state to expand broadband. The governor has announced now a significant program to expand broadband. I believe it's going to work well with the federal state initiative and hopefully with private initiatives so that we can see more proliferation. It's very important. It's important to our job creation. It's important to our healthcare delivery. You think about these rural clinics that are out there that need access to the high-speed broadband to get the consult with the hospital where oftentimes your specialists, your doctors are. It's important to education, where I mentioned these programs where schools now have access to high-speed broadband. But when the kids go home, you know, some of the kids don't have access to high-speed broadband when they get home. They're falling behind their peers who may have it. So, and it's important to quality of life. So we can work together. We can do better on this going forward.
Okay. Very quickly, I know that you have a lot of constituents who really care about Lyme disease. Many people have it. Are we making any progress here?
We're making some progress. I'm not satisfied. But, you know, if you break it down into these categories, testing, how can it be that a country as great as ours is, we don't even have a test that picks up half the cases of Lyme? This is really bad for a variety of reasons, not the least of which is that it's widely agreed upon by the medical community that the sooner you diagnose this, the better chance for a full recovery. This is beyond the obvious. It's also important because the medical community, quite candidly, is divided on this subject on whether or not chronic Lyme exists. I would tell you this. I have constituents all over that are suffering, some of them for many, many years, to me, it's clear there is a chronic Lyme, whether you want to call it post-treatment Lyme or chronic Lyme, it's there. And we need cures and solutions. We do appear now to have a better test coming. It looks like a protein test. The problem now, your testing is, we draw your blood and we look for evidence that the body is fighting these antibodies, which takes time to form. So when somebody gets bit by a tick, naturally, they'll go in to see a provider. But when you draw the blood, there's no evidence yet of the. And so we come up with these false negatives and actually false positives too. But now we have, it looks like we're going to get a protein test, that the elevation of protein the minute that you're exposed. So that is going to be encouraging. We also have progress on prevention. We have a new product that's ready for commercialization, is passed through testing, called Lyme Shield. This is a pellet that when you introduce it into the wild and mice ingest it, it actually cleanses them of the Lyme disease and vaccinates them going forward. By the way, this is the same ecological approach that we took to rabies, to reducing rabies in the environment. So this is encouraging. Now, I will state that this is Lyme. And of course, we have other tick-borne diseases we're concerned about, which this product is for Lyme. So we got more work to do, but that is encouraging. Finally, where we're really not making the grade, in my view, either the treatment protocols and the insurance company coverage. This is where our bill comes in. We have a bill that better organizes the federal government to bring forward cures and solution by requiring diverse scientific viewpoints. Because when you put your finger right on this, the issue we're having is the narrow definitions coming out of the Centers for Disease Control as to what actually is Lyme and what are the proper treatment protocols. In fact, it flared up in this state only 6 months ago when we came forward, a bill that I supported that basically provided some protections for doctors now who are conducting experimental treatments. And some of them have been successful, yet we don't have a repository of knowledge of what they've done, because these doctors, of course, won't send in the information on their success because their fear of criminal charges and even civil liability. So what this bill in New York State did was provide protections for the treatment protocol. Some think that this gives them protection from all medical malpractice. That's not true. It just says you can't pursue them solely on the decision of the protocol that they're using to treat. So that is helpful. But then what we need to do is address these guidelines. The best way to address the guidelines, because I pressed the Centers for Disease Control director, why aren't you changing the guidelines? And they say, well, you know, if the science pointed to change, we'd change it. Well, here's the issue, is that a system that is meant to be virtuous is non-virtuous. They use these anonymous referees to decide whether or not papers are published, these double-blind trials and everything. So when we actually get a good paper that shows the existence of chronic Lyme and some of these experimental treatments, it's sent out anonymously and it's thumbs down. It doesn't get published. So what our bill does is it requires two things. One is diverse scientific viewpoints. So again, we're bringing the light of day into this. And we've got federal and non-federal working groups. So we'll be able to get expertise from our region. And not surprisingly, some of the very best researchers and practitioners addressing tick-borne diseases and Lyme disease come from our area because of what a scourge this is. Well, when we get that input, that, I believe, will hold the CDC accountable to change the guidelines, which will help the treatment protocol bring forward cures and solutions. And, Al, the other thing it will do is when I press the insurance companies on this and I say, how come you're not covering more of it? They say, well, you know, if it was approved care, then we'd provide more coverage. See, so if we get the guidelines changed and approved care changes, we'll get better insurance company coverage for our longtime sufferers. So I tell folks out there, look, we're fighting this hard, and we're not going to stop on that.
Chris Gibson, always wonderful to hear from you. It's amazing how often I agree with you. I mean, you know, I think you're absolutely right on this Lyme issue. We've seen a wicked case of medical politics occurring, and that's disgraceful when we're trying to make people healthy.
You know, the sad thing is, too, Alan, is that at the end of the day, you know, our people are suffering. And quite frankly, it's not like the healthcare expenditures are down. They're up, because when you have chronic Lyme, it appears in so many different fashions and so many different, I mean, you have people end up in the system. So we're better off taking the changing prevention, changing treatment protocols, even if it costs the insurance companies a little bit of money in terms of those treatments. They're better off, because in the end, these patients are ending up in the healthcare system anyway.
You bet. Chris Gibson, again, thanks for being our friend. Thanks for being with us. We so much appreciate all your good work.
Thank you, Alan, and best wishes to all the listeners out there.